Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Well, we've had some wonderful rain and lightning storms this week. In fact, while I'm recording this, there's one rolling through my little neighborhood right now. Anyway, it's kind of nice for August this year. Have you been able to get out and enjoy them too, or maybe enjoy them from your home? I hope so. I like to keep this show filled with Ken Lane stories that are either brand new or were created around the same season in years gone by. So our first episode today was turned loose in Joshua Tree just a few days ago as of this broadcast. Titled Hot August Bites, your mind will take a ride making stops in the mountains of the Southwest, at human DNA evolution, and finally at an insightful discourse on outside gatherings of many sorts. Happy trails!
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Another hot August night. I've been up at the Sacred Grove for a while, surveying the pinyons, conversing with the blue crows, smelling the sagebrush, investigating the boulder spires, tracking the evidence of several recent thunderstorms. The mallow is coming up nicely. There are a few silky yellow saffron blooms on the old man cactus. The only cactus around up there, really. They're about the height of a small rabbit and nearly as furry. Best not to touch, though. They look a lot cozier than they are, and there's nothing more overrated than cozy. I got some emails about this tourist whose feet got burnt up pretty bad from losing his flip-flops in the sand dunes of Death Valley and having to get back barefoot in the midsummer Mojave heat wave in the hottest place on earth. Somebody sends me a link to this news story and says you ought to roast this tourist. And I'm thinking, well, he's already pretty well roasted. I'm sure he's not proud about it. It can be rough out there, part of a great circle of life. And death, and whatever else, the sum of it all. Every spring, which can last a good long time in the high desert, although it's totally forgotten by July, I get acquainted with a new batch of creatures. The same dove couple returns no later than the 1st of March, usually mid-February, and another half dozen mourning doves are brought into this world. The rock squirrels and the Mojave cottontails usually have a trio each that makes it to adulthood. And be you lizard or fledgling, somebody dies when the roadrunner comes round. When the bobcat comes by night. And so I return from the mountains to find some tufts of rabbit fur on the patio and one less bunny at the watering bowl. We're going up to the Eastern Sierra to escape that kind of heat, as humans have long done when the weather turns. One of many reasons California was seen as a Garden of Eden. When English pirates such as Francis Drake first got a look at it, and some two centuries later when the Spaniards finally headed up from Mexico. Because the coastal natives had such an easy life of abundance, living in the year-round abundance and perfect climate of the California shorelands, the wetlands, and the bays. The ocean provided every delicacy of the sea, the rivers brought fresh water, the native oaks produced plentiful acorns. Ample game, large and small, for hunting, and the population was small enough that families and tribes tended to have plenty of space. And the ability to up and move whenever it felt right. Like the periodic burning of their tule hut villages and settling at another site on the creek or river not far away. For those who lived inland, people went up higher in the summer months, like the Timbisha people going up to the pinyon forest of the Panamint in the summertime. These days, it seems only the very wealthy and the upper-income work-from-home con artists routinely change their geography when the weather turns. Nobody else can afford it. Beyond a week or a long weekend here and there, now and then, straight to the credit card balance.
Desert Oracle Radio.
The earth itself is holy, a sacred garden, an unlikely paradise in the cold, vast expanse of space and star. The earth is alive, and we are a living part of it, a crucial part of this planet's past, present, and future destiny. Sacred time returns on schedule year after year, season after season. The ancient festivals marking the wheel of the year are holy moments of time out of sync. These times remind us that our time is fleeting and long time goes onward, ever onward. We have advanced and evolved at a rate we can only consider supernatural compared to a world of creatures who've remained much as they were, much as they are. We delight in a raven using objects such as tools. We delight in a raven using an object as a tool by the affection of a good dog, by the complexities of biology and status and the lives of insects, birds, and especially our primate cousins. Yet, we know something is very different in our own kind. A switch turned on during this flash of time, a time measured in thousands of years on a planet whose life is measured in billions of years. And in this accelerated time, through the inventions of astrology and agriculture, magic and reason, science and art, supercomputers and ritual psychedelics. Bird and beast remain mostly static during our outrageous million-year journey from apes on the Serengeti to astronauts stuck on the space station. Because if it's Boeing, they're not going. But there are various other spaceships available for the job, thank God. This is from a science article in the Guardian newspaper from 2004. Professor Lon's team examined the DNA of 214 genes involved in brain development in humans, monkeys, rats, and mice. By comparing mutations that had no effect on the function of the genes with those mutations that did, they came up with a measure of the pressure of natural selection on those genes. The scientists found that the human brain's genes had gone through an intense amount of evolution in a short amount of time, a process that far outstripped the evolution of the genes of other animals. Quote, "We've proven that there is a big distinction," Professor Lon said. "Human evolution is, in fact, a privileged process because it involves a large number of mutations and a large number of genes. To accomplish so much in so little evolutionary time requires a selective process that is perhaps categorically different from the typical processes of acquiring new biological traits." Perhaps. This is Desert Oracle Radio, a production of... what are we calling it tonight? This is a production of the Santa Minerva Broadcast Network. Our motto is a trademark of the Order of Santa Minerva and also will not be announced over the air as it remains secret at this time. Soundscapes on this radio program are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. As we are propagandists for wild nature and for human spiritual experience within or at least near to wild nature, much of the material on this broadcast regards the long history and even longer prehistory of people honoring certain places in the wilderness as the natural temples of our beautiful planet, our earthly paradise. But much of that history is not very far off at all. And some of it is so recent as to be in our present. Outdoor extravaganzas such as Burning Man are deliberate in their connection to ancient pagan rites and great seasonal festivals of the world's religions held in natural settings that are striking, unforgettable. Even the big corporate events like Coachella and the other 100 rapidly fading music festivals benefit from society's great need for such spectacles under the sun and stars. even if they offer no spiritual nourishment beyond $20 plastic cups of beer and lip-sync performances by half-alive media brands. But even those used to be a little heavier. William S. Burroughs described a mid-1970s arena concert by Led Zeppelin as a rite involving the evocation and transmutation of energy that bears some resemblance to the trance music found in Morocco, which is magical in origin and purpose. That is, concerned with the evocation and control of spiritual forces. Evoking the great god Pan, Pan the god of panic, representing the real magical forces that sweep away the spurious. For the big events, when everybody comes from near and far, you need a natural setting, a rustic setting that's a reasonable distance from the town and the city. Though Woodstock Festival was a couple of hours from New York City and a bunch of other big cities, unless you got stuck in traffic for a day or two trying to get there. The great stone circles of England are reached by ancient chalky ridgeways, and Red Rocks is just west of Denver. But many of us require a more intimate setting where the majesty of the natural environment is the headliner. And we are part of it, but do not overwhelm it. Think of a herd of pronghorns moving across a vast landscape of the Mountain West, or shorebirds dotting a great wetland, or a flock of pinyon jays circling the conifer forest. In recent decades, there has been a subcultural appetite for a kind of historic outdoor role-playing amongst fans of the television shows about Vikings and thrones and whatnot, which is perfectly fine if that's what they enjoy, if that's what you enjoy. And for the past 7,500 years or so, Eastern religion has established permanent homes in the Americas and Western Europe, such as the late Buddhist master Thich Nhat Hanh's Deer Park and Plum Village monasteries, and yoga retreats, even if they're held on the side of a busy state highway full of military cargo trucks and such. They've long attracted weekenders who long for something beyond strip mall Pilates studios. But what about the mainstream Americans of the last century, that time of middle-class prosperity and can-do American know-how that was the envy of the world? Well, I came across some accounts of the most mainstream demographic of that era, the community leaders and local businessmen of yore, enthusiastically engaging in annual wilderness rituals in direct emulation of the ancients worshiping in the high places. The natural cathedrals, the rocky outcrop hilltops, sacred forest, and wild deserts, where Druid and Thracian and Canaanite and Lakota solemnly perform their religious offices under the charging sky. These Americans and their 20th century wilderness rituals, they were the Freemasons, members of a once ubiquitous fraternal order with beautifully ornate temples in the very heart of every American town and city. And here I read from an old article by Brother Keith Arrington, a longtime librarian for the Grand Lodge of Iowa. Brother Arrington writes, "Tradition has it that in ancient times, Masons met on the highest hill and in the lowest vales to secure privacy. That tradition alone has been sufficient to stir the imaginations of modern Masons, with the result being that Masonic meetings have been held in many strange and weird places," as one who frowned upon the practice put it. "The laws and statutes of the Lodge of Aberdeen of 1670 state that we ordain that no lodge be holden within a dwelling house, whether is people living in it, but in the open fields, except it be ill weather. Freemasons assembled at Crockin Tor in the county of Devon, England, in the 17th century. This was a rocky hill rising to a height of 1,300 feet, studded with granite boulders, and was a wild and remote spot, 10 miles from any town. The spot was a natural amphitheater where boulders on the rising sides provided seats for 100 or more, while a table was hewn from the moorstone. Historic Mammoth Cave, 135 feet below Kentucky's surface, has been the setting for lodge meetings, as have the Carlsbad Caverns of New Mexico, at a depth of 750 feet. Since the temperature in the caverns is 56 degrees, those attending have been urged to dress warmly. In Death Valley, third degrees have been conferred under the stars on the sun-baked floor of the Devil's Golf Course near Furnace Creek. On one occasion, 40 years ago, all furniture for the lodge was transported over 100 miles to the site, which was surrounded by such rough salt fields that any approach, except by the road which was fully tiled, was virtually impossible. One observer found most impressive the door from the preparation room, which had been hauled in and set up in the northwest corner of the lodge. He commented, "When that door was opened, it opened to the universe." According to Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry, its religion is that general one of nature and primitive revelation, handed down to us from some ancient and patriarchal priesthood in which all men may agree and in which no man can differ. And here are a couple of common English language phrases and terms that come from the rituals and catechism of the Freemasons. On the square is used in the Bob Dylan song. Which song is it? When he says, "I eat when I'm hungry, drink when I'm dry, live my life on the square," it's on Time Out of Mind. In masonry, as in carpentry or any such building trade, the right-angled tool called the square is used for exactly that purpose, to make sure your corners and edges are square, that they line up properly. Freemasons use the phrase "on the square" to refer to a fellow Mason. Ronald Sinclair's all right, he's on the square. And then it became general phrase and general usage. Likewise, on the level is a judgment of character, your own or someone else's, usually someone else's, based on the tradesman's use of the tool known as a level. These days, even a $5 plastic level from the stolen tools guy at the swap meet contains one or more glass vials filled with an amber alcohol and an air bubble. When that bubble is in the center, your surface is level. Good job. In Leonard Cohen's song, On the Level, he means let's keep it honest, let's keep it above ground, etc. Keep it on the level. If you've been blackballed, that means you've been excluded, banned, canceled, and you'll never know exactly who or why did you like that. This comes from the secret ballot of the Freemasons when deciding whether to admit someone to the Brotherhood. Each member of the lodge votes by choosing a white or black marble or pearl or whatever as a yes or no. Only takes a single no vote and you're blackballed. Ever been hoodwinked? Well, this comes from the hood or blindfold initiates must wear during the ceremony admitting them to the lodge. Like in Romeo and Juliet, when Benvolio says to Romeo, "We'll have no Cupid hoodwinked with a scarf." Except that play was publicly performed and published many years before the 1717 supposed coming out of the Freemasons in London. Now, if you're a traveling man, like in the Ricky Nelson song, maybe you've got a girl in every town around the world, or a guy, or a rental property, ideally. Maybe you're on the run. But in Freemasonry, to be asked if you're a traveling man is asking if you're a Freemason. This goes back to the medieval days when the craft was truly secret, and the preferred answer was that you were indeed a traveler, and specifically traveling from west to the east, toward the light. From Amboy to Zizek's, broadcasting across the great Mojave Wilderness and around the world through the magic of podcasting, this is Desert Oracle Radio, soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Thanks to our supporters who keep the show going at patreon.com, Desert Oracle. Although, if you want to join that elect group, don't do it off your iPhone, because now the iPhone keeps 30% of everything if you try to do it through the Patreon app, I guess. So do it from a web browser on your computer, or, oh, who knows. All the social security numbers and our names and addresses and everything, they're out. They're loose on the internet, so maybe we won't have to do any of this stuff anymore, and you can just come by the Sacred Grove and throw a couple of coins in the sacred spring. Thank you for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Well, the world we live in plays tricks on anything with eyes. Have you ever looked at a tree and seen something that is not a tree? Or how about a northern pygmy owl? Have you ever seen the back of one of those little hunters? Search it up. Well, Ken Lane's episode that's coming up is about the things that we see in machines. So here's our second episode released by Ken Lane on August 20th, 2021, and it's titled Faces in the Windmills. And I will ask you, do you name your cars and talk to them?
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. The heat has fried my brain. It's just too much. The second half of July was sort of a reprieve for the Mojave. Not a whole lot of monsoon rain, but milder weather than we've come to expect over these past several uncomfortable summers in the high desert. But now the real heat is back. And getting some of those cherished heat of desert summer power outages. Nothing makes a person want to pack up and go north like in Blade Runner, like in the theatrical version, the end, when the two robots find true love and take the hover car to what looks like the northern forest. Maybe British Columbia, which is no longer your escape in the summer if you've been watching the fire news. The heat is not good for the brain, not at this level. Somebody died just walking around Phoenix late last month, apparently a tourist on what was supposed to be a day hike in town, and would be in December or January. It's just hard to concentrate. Makes you want to open up a bottle and put on some red, blue, black, silver. Quiet nights on the American desert. It's eerie out here sometimes. And not in a good way, with the coyotes singing and the great horned owls hooting. And whatever terrible sound the nightjar makes, the common poor will. That's a strange bird. It sounds like the PA system broke on the Starship Enterprise. Mayday, mayday. All hands on deck. Destroy all the robots. Sounds see the robots tried to unionize, and well, the business of Starfleet is business. Along with military superiority for the common good of the outer occupied planets. And the security of trade routes, of course. And the free exchange of scientific and cultural knowledge, interstellar conventions, interspecies rights, etc. But one thing that cannot happen is the robots cannot organize for collective bargaining. So the moment we knew was coming in the darker chambers of our hearts is finally here. The famous electric car company is going to make robots because Elon Musk is just working his way through a life of being a Philip K. Dick character. Palmer Eldritch is the obvious one and an interesting one. Tyrell, Eldon Tyrell, is the Blade Runner version of Eldon Rosen, the tycoon who makes and markets the androids and do androids dream of electric sheep? Eldon, Eldritch, Elon, they're just names. Just variations in the timeline, nothing serious, nothing to worry about. You ever get an idea and then over time realize that it wasn't an idea at all? It wasn't about something external. It was a vision of some distant space or time. A decade or so back, while walking in the foothills with the dog, I had this strange vision that sort of overlaid the time and terrain where I was walking. It was a familiar sort of image, and I wondered where it was from, what story or painting or movie or archetype was generating it. Or was it a fresh idea of some kind? They do happen every decade or so, but this did not seem that way. And it wasn't the Mojave Desert, it was a Great Basin. A higher altitude desert. With forests of pinyons in the hills and in the mountains. Well, over the years, I figured out that the person I saw in the distance on that landscape was me. But many years in the future, and instead of a dog walking alongside me, it was a treadmill robot. A robot, finally. Well, some years later, I found that land, and I've been paying it off ever since. I recognized it instantly, and from various science fiction shows, I've learned that in old age, one can rely upon a robot companion to help with the chores. Bring some stones over for the tower, feed the robot sheep, that kind of thing. Plug itself in at night like the Roomba. The creepiest and most obvious thing is to make human society's robots look like comatose versions of ourselves. That's not convincing. Who wants it? People bother us every day about everything. Why do you think we love dogs so much? And we love our machines, our bicycles and pickup trucks and power tools and gaming computers. We love to make them full characters in our adventure. We don't need the household robot to look like a department store mannequin with a face. At least on the regular model, if somebody wants that, fine. They can order it, get the custom package with four interchangeable heads. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, but please don't force the rest of us to hear about it. As members of a species specifically designed to see patterns and symbols in the natural world, a natural world filled with patterns and symbols, we can see a face in pretty much anything. Now, some people lose this ability after childhood, but if you're lucky, well, then you cannot even drive past those windmills and desert hot springs without noticing the faces on them all. Comically blank, but with a personality we seem to recognize in our fellow workers. Electric outlets are faces, the knots in a wooden plank, side-by-side windows. So I was reasonably sure I was glancing at my future because the figure did not appear to be walking any place in particular in any particular hurry. And that's an ideal application for the all-terrain treadmill companion robot keeping up at whatever pace required. We all generally hope to reach a useful old age, if we can live that long, it would be nice if we could swap out parts like that Wall-E, just changing gears and treads as they wear out. I mean, it's more or less at hand. The current low level of civilization does try to kill us all for all our lives with the factory meat full of antibiotics and toxins, with the grind of trying to keep afloat, trying to hold what little ground you've got, toying with our little amusements. Now you can't have TikTok. Oh, now you can have it again. But now your car is connected to the internet for some infernal purpose. But if we survive all of that, and a lot of us do, we could just swap out the broken human parts as they fail with the help of our household robot that can do anything. Just download the expansion pack. Cataract surgery, hip replacement, freshen up the Botox and the hair plugs, cook healthy meals of pasture-fed organic bison and some sort of vegetable that tastes good with a very particular preparation, and clean up the kitchen afterwards. Maybe you could even unplug the internet at night and tell us to go to bed for our own good. To give us a rest, to give us some peaceful sleep, a break from the pandemics, the politics, the catastrophic climate change, the giddy real estate bubbles, losing track of which fire is the largest wildfire in state history, or regional history, or recent history, or recent memory, like they say on the news all the time. Because nobody remembers anything before about 2015. Late in the day of August 11, with my heat-fried brain no longer able to remember which month it was. I had a moment of joy because I thought I'd gotten through September 11 without noticing. Well, I was wrong. They were just all working together to make this the biggest 20th anniversary 911 of all time. But friends, there is good news on the horizon for all of us. The human population is finally slowing down, finally hitting a wall. Now, I'd gotten used to the population peak coming in another 30 years or so, and I wondered if I'd be around to see it. Because it will be better on the other side, there's no doubt. A lot of our troubles won't naturally reverse once there are fewer of us. Because as we settle into healthier numbers over the rest of this century and the next, around the world, a lot of what we're missing comes back on its own. Birds and fish, big animals on the plains and the savanna. The rich fungal network just below the ground that connects forests, that connects stands of trees and hedgerows and brush. The cryptobiological crust that holds the desert floor together so it doesn't all blow away and become sand dunes. Lately, I've been reading this wonderful book by Dan Flores. It's called American Serengeti. It's about the big animals that filled the Great Plains just a century and a half ago. And the way so many human cultures depended upon these herds and the actions of the predators as well. The focus is on the animals that barely survive what happened when the American nation crossed the Mississippi and filled in to the west. Just barely is sometimes good enough. Bison and pronghorn, the brown bear that Lewis and Clark named the grizzly before shooting an obscene number of the great bears that the tribes rightly considered gods walking on earth. But it's a hopeful book because it also tells of places in the Great Plains where buffalo roam again, where the antelope play, early sections of what can be great open preserves of river and hill, and especially those wide open plains. It takes work, but can you imagine any better work? Bringing rivers and streams back to more natural states where things more or less take care of themselves. To make that land alive again as people keep leaving it behind. According to the new U.S. Census numbers, we are now mostly congregating in look-alike residential and retail distribution developments and a handful of overbuilt and under-resilient mega-suburbs in Harris County and Maricopa County, Tract Home, Florida, and Tract Home, Salt Lake, Austin, and Nashville. Real estate in these places has doubled in value over the past decade, as people have poured in from the rest of the country, which is rapidly depopulating. More than half, 52% of American counties lost population over the past 10 years. And overall, the growth of real population has crawled to a near halt. In this nation, where growth for growth's sake has been the only answer to the question, what are we here for? I mean, Phoenix is the big city that saw the most population growth over the past decade. Buckeye is one of the top 10 fastest. What do you even call Buckeye? And the fastest growing sort of urban area in the country is an immense old age community in Central Florida called the Villages. The boomers have fueled the entire real estate bubble that we're all kind of stuck inside for the moment. There are 70 million baby boomers still alive in the United States. Between now and about 2027, just 6 years away, the reality of extreme old age and non-existent generational family homes will mean millions of houses in overheated markets will become vacant. 20 million American homes, mostly single-family homes, in places propped up by high real estate prices, will empty out over the next dozen years. About 10% of all houses in this whole country. The vulture funds that vacuumed up distressed residential real estate after the 2008 housing collapse will do the same thing, but there will not be the same rental market. A few cities may get larger. Most will get smaller. The thing about population trends is once they start rolling, they cannot be changed. Japan and Italy tell us a lot about what happens when there are very few young people. And Russia shows us what happens when a world power can't convince its own citizens that they should continue to be alive, let alone reproduce. Perhaps the world can sustainably maintain a global population of 8 billion, but we are increasingly likely to never rise above that mark if we get there at all. COVID has accelerated these trends because a virus is opportunistic. Just as it accelerated all the other population trends, more fear and anxiety, less marriage and babies, less immigration, as these trends are both internal and external, replicated globally. China is trying to figure out how to be a capitalist, totalitarian state in an era of declining population, declining fertility, market saturation, an overwhelming personal debt where the birth rate is dropping by about 20% every year. So the Chinese government decided to crack down on video games. Because the younger generations are basically playing video games in apartments because there's nothing else to do, nothing else they can afford, not enough work, and what's the point anyway? Half a century, and we understand that we've doubled the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. We've killed off two-thirds of the remaining wildlife on Earth. And this was during the age of the environmental movement, the environmental organizations, the great global nonprofits that sent us fundraising junk mail with penguins and elephants on the envelope. Send money now and we'll take care of it. None of it is reflected in a very flattering way upon our species, the humans. But that is a challenge to humanity because we're the only species that buys self-help books, so we know in our hearts so we can do better. We can make more of the world like it used to be. We can have beautiful places to go for our vacations and holidays and hiking trips and backcountry camping and hunting and fishing. We can have an earthly paradise. Hey, have you ever been to the Pygmalion Festival in Urbana, Illinois? Well, if you're anywhere at all nearby, why not come this year? Safe and sane. You got to be fully vaccinated 14 days prior. It's coming up quick. The weekend of September 21 through 23rd, Thursday through Saturday, is the festival. Desert Oracle will be live on stage Friday night on the 25 o'clock Brewing Company stage, 8 p.m., Learn all about it at thisispygmalion.com. And this, friends, is Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks for joining us. It's almost autumn. Hang in there. And good night from the voice of the desert.
So, as I was saying to my car Alex the other day, we really need to thank Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio, and we need to thank the good folks at KGBM who support and make space for this show. So thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. I would love to hear from you, so please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgbm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Until then, stay well and sweet dreams.